Well, would you like to say any more about cycling?
Well, when I went to the conference of the Conservation Society at Cheltenham, I was talking about air pollution. I described a lot of my work in the field, and somebody stood up at the end and said, "You've said nothing about lead in petrol." And I said I didn't regard it as a serious problem. And they said, "Oh, but you can't do that. We've got a campaign against it and all that thing." I said, "I still think it's a rather trivial problem." And they pestered me to say that I was a heretic and all that sort of thing. And I said, "Well, now, how many people here came in cars to this conference?" And lots of hands went up. I said, "How many people here came on a bicycle?" I said, "I did. I came from London on a bicycle. How many of you came from anywhere on a bicycle?" You know, about two people put their hands up. They'd come from Gloucester or somewhere. And I said, "Well, who's doing something about it then?" And that was the end of that particular argument. It is a thing I can thoroughly recommend. I did take up running.
What can you thoroughly recommend? Cycling.
Cycling. I did, especially for older people, because I did take up, I did marathon running. One of my daughters went in for the London Marathon, and when I'd seen her finish and still in a fit state to have conversation, I thought, well, damn it, I could do this. And so I actually did it. I went in for a marathon at Guildford and then another one at Guildford in 1984, but my knees suffered rather seriously, my knee joints, that is. So I decided that I don't want to do it anymore. But it is quite a serious disadvantage. I mean, I see even Zola Budd has now got hip trouble, probably as a result of running barefoot. It's something which I don't recommend for older people to take up unless they've become good at it when they're younger. But cycling is something which is very smooth, and I find my knees get better when I cycle, whereas when I run they get worse. There are a lot of other things that one can do in life, and politics is one of them. I can't resist feeling involved in politics, and I've always supported the Labour Party in the belief that one's got to join a party and make the compromises within the party, unlike Owen, who gets out when people don't agree with him. But that apart, I was riding my bicycle one day through Westminster, and I went past Transport House, and I thought to myself, well, I'll go and inquire, what do you do to become a candidate for Parliament? So I just went in and said, what do you do? And they said, well, who are you and what do you do, etc., etc. I tell them, and they said, well, we might get you put on List B. So I was in due course put on List B.
But this is when you were a party member but had no experience as a councillor. Is that right?
No, I had no experience. I'd just been a supporter, basically.
But I see, but not a formal party member at that stage.
Oh, a formal party member, yes, since 1946. But yes. I'd taken part in one or two hopeless local elections on for the council, you know, but you don't get many in West Wimbledon voting Labour.
Yes, yes.
I went in and strangely enough, a very short time afterwards, I got a request to go and present myself in Esher, where they had discovered that their candidate was a member of the Communist Party, and they chucked him out. And they invited me in. And so after the formalities of a selection procedure, I was duly chosen as the candidate for Esher, where they had a majority of 25,000 or something, I don't know, or 30,000, I believe it was, something enormous. But the campaigning experience was a very rewarding one, and I carried on an environmentalist campaign, which meant I got a lot of Liberal support, and I think we did very creditably in that election in 1970. But the main result of that was that when the Labour Party got control of our borough of Merton in 1971, they had the job of finding five aldermen, and so they invited me to be one because I'd actually gone through the process of fighting a campaign, and they thought I was possibly sufficiently experienced and convinced of the need for party unity and all that sort of thing. And so I spent 7 years on the Merton Council as an alderman, which was quite an exciting thing to do. It's a thing that I, like most of the things that I've done at somebody else's request rather than because I tried to get the opportunity to do it. I mean, I've never actually been elected except by the council to an aldermanship, not by the people as a councillor. And it's the same with jobs. I have applied for one or two jobs, but I've never actually got the job I've applied for. The ones that I have had have been very suitable, because other people thought I was suitable for the post, presumably. But that excursion into politics certainly and learning about the administration of local authorities and so on, being a member of the Metropolitan Water Board for 3 years before it was abolished and taken into the Thames Water Authority. And I was also on the Clean Air Council, which was another body very closely related to local authorities, and the National Society for Clean Air, which is very much a local authority body. And I'm still very active in that.
That seems, though, a little closer to your professional work.
Yes, yes. In fact, my main activity there now is in the nuclear field, because I feel that nuclear technology is like... I mean, some people think of it as a genie that's got to be put back in the bottle, but I don't hold that philosophy. I don't think you solve a problem by pretending it didn't exist. That is, by stopping all nuclear activity. I think you've got to learn to do it properly and well and safely. And so although I'm very much against nuclear weapons, I'm in favour of developing nuclear power technology, because I think it's going to happen and we should try and do it properly and well, rather than do it skimping. So I find that a lot of my political colleagues don't agree with me with this, except those who work in the nuclear field who do agree with me, of course. But I think we're all agreed about nuclear weapons on my side of the political scale.
Can you say a little bit about your work on the Clean Air Council or at atmospheric research committees you've been on?
Well, the Clean Air Council was originally really a body designed to comment on proposed legislation and to comment on regulations that are incorporated in legislation. That is to say, the things that the minister is going to decide upon when the bill is passed. He has to decide on details. And the Clean Air Council was a very good body for advising the minister of what the reactions of the local authorities and other people would be. And they had a rather poor representation from the universities. They had one or two engineering consultants who'd work with ICI and that sort of thing, but I was for a time the only university representative, and I tried to get them to appoint one or two more. But it doesn't seem to be, that sort of work doesn't seem to be very much the taste of most university people, and we never really got very many. And I also tried to get them to have a technical committee, because there are a lot of technical details which the council ought to discuss, which there was never time for in the full sessions, which were once a month or whatever they were. And we didn't want to bother the civil service with having to keep minutes, detailed minutes, of a discussion. I mean, they were more interested in recording decisions of the council, recording its opinion about certain potential regulations and so on. But we did manage to get a technical committee after a time, and I was made the chairman of this technical committee, and we did quite a lot of useful investigations. And then the present government came along and abolished the Clean Air Council. And then that wasn't the only committee that I was on which they abolished. They also abolished effectively the Aeronautical Research Council.
Yes.
Which had a lot of committees, and one of these was the Atmospheric Environment Committee, or the it started off as a gust research committee, but it became the Atmospheric Environment Committee, which is essentially a group of meteorologists in the university, the Met Office, and one or two others, who were together with civil servants in the field. And those committees were very good, because they made the universities aware of the problems in the aeronautical world, and they kept people like me well informed, so that we didn't set research students off on wild, useless projects, but got them working on something relevant. And that again was abolished. It's not considered worthwhile, because the accounting obviously showed costs without any money being paid in on the same account. And so that is not considered to be a good idea now, but I don't agree on that, of course.
Do you see any substantial achievements, notable achievements, isolated achievements of these committees, or is it the general background of exchanging information between the universities and the consumers,
well,
so to speak?
In the case of the Clean Air Council, we did a lot of very good work on asbestos and lead, and I think we got the government to move in the right direction all the time, and I think it's a great pity that the present government didn't have the Clean Air Council to advise it on its lead legislation, because the lead has already gone down without having gone beyond what the Clean Air Council envisaged, and it's I think that its work was underestimated in this respect. Mm-hmm. We did start the work on asbestos, and we got blue asbestos abolished. We effectively kept a continuous review on the application of the Clean Air Act. So we were telling councils that they were being slow in applying the legislation. We got the government to extend the original legislation, which applied to what they defined as black areas, to the whole country. In effect, it was a very good way of seeing the legislation through to a successful end. And, you know, London is now one complete clean air area, and the minister held a sherry party on the top of Westminster Council offices where we could see for 10 miles in every direction instead of having to look at Battersea Power Station through the pall of smoke. And altogether, I think it was a very good way of carrying out government. And I only wish that the present government would have more consultation of that kind. It was very well informed. We had councillors from Sheffield and places like that where the problem had been faced on an everyday basis by people who came to the council meeting. And we had people, engineers, who had been working with ICI and the coal board and so on. Yes, Derek Ezra was a member of the council at that time, and there were people from BP and Charrington's, the fuel sellers, and the oil industry from Shell and BP and so on. And it's a pity that we didn't have more people from universities. I think one reason why I was able to be successful with that period of research students, when we were doing environmental problems essentially on pollution, was because of my experience and all the contacts I'd made as a result of being on the Clean Air Council.
Well, I wonder if I can change the subject. Please say more if you wish, but otherwise I'll move on, if I may, to the Royal Meteorological Society.
Yes.
I see you've been secretary from 1954 to 58, you've been vice president, and now you're president. There must be many ways in which you've served the society. Would you like to say a little about it?
When it was in Cromwell Road, just down the road from this college, of course it was very easy to be active, to make a significant contribution as an editor of weather and as secretary of the society. Again, it was something which I didn't seek, but Shepherd, who was head of the department at that time, who was president, gave me a brief which said, you are now expected to provide an initiative for the activities of the society. And we set up a lot of educational courses for ordinary people, ordinary members outside the advanced academic and university world.
Courses held at
field courses. No, they were held at field courses at various parts of the country.
Yes.
And these have been developed much more since my time.
Yes,
indeed. They're a very major part of the society's activities. And I think that that was something which we achieved in the 50s. Of course, I came in, weather was already set up and the journals were all set up. I didn't really have much to do with that. We did get rid of some of the society's older commitments, which were rarely of a climatological nature, dating back to the previous century and so on. But the main move of the society away from Cromwell Road, selling the property there and moving to Bracknell, I had nothing to do with at all. In fact, when I moved into the maths department, people said, why are you going out of meteorology? And I said, well, I'm not. And I haven't any more to say on the matter, and I've remained in it. And it was much to my surprise that I was asked to be president, because I thought that I'd gone past the stage of being eligible almost by my age and the fact that nobody had thought I was suitable in the meantime. And then out of the blue it came, and I hope I can do a good job.
Have you got any special initiatives that you've been planning?
Well, I've been pushing satellites, of course. and the use of satellite pictures, because I think that they're such a wonderful source of information and grossly underused and very badly presented on television. And there's so much more that could be done with satellites than is being done.
But is this a matter of using society as a means of communication or some other...
Well, really, I think it's a question of putting in front of the people who are actually going to do the work in the long run, the Met Office perhaps, and other people who may be in the society, putting before them the great possibilities that pictures present. You see, until I showed a lot of slides made from Dundee, people hadn't really had a feast of good pictures. Now, you get good pictures if you go to Dundee and get blow-ups of bits of the pass, and then it's quite easy to make a good slide of that when you've got a good picture. You can't make a good slide out of a bad picture. And the dreadful bodge-up and smudge-up that they do on the BBC weather forecast now is an absolute insult to the original wonderful material. And I suppose that they would argue that it's expensive and that ordinary people were quite satisfied with that rubbish, but I think it's a mistake, and that in other countries, Japan, Czechoslovakia, for example, they have much more information of a much higher quality put over on their television about the weather. Well, that's one thing, but also, of course, it's a wonderful source of information for any researcher, and I'm trying to get people to take it up as a source for their particular kind of research. It can be useful in so many different ways, much far beyond anything I've used it for.
And you're not keen to change the structure of the society?
Well, I mean, for posterity, perhaps I should record that my own view is that we should sell the house that we've got in Bracknell and rent offices somewhere and use our financial resources in a different way, rather than trying to keep a building, let somebody else look after the business of keeping the office structure in good repair and so on. That was the problem in Cromwell Road, that the thing was getting old and it needed a gigantic investment to make it profitable. And I think we should rent offices, and maybe this would involve more travelling. But we use, there are plenty of other premises like Bracknell College and Imperial College where we do a lot of our, hold a lot of our meetings now, and we could do this all over the country. I think if we moved away from Bracknell and London, we would have a much better feel for the usefulness of doing things in Manchester and Newcastle and Edinburgh and so on. So I think that's what I think we should do. I'm not trying to use this opportunity to plug this line, because obviously it's got to be done very discreetly within the committees which are going to decide, because there are some people who hold the same view as I do and others who hold quite the opposite view, that we should have a prestigious premises opened by the Queen and that we should stick to this and nothing less is worthy of such a society as ours. But I think it's a great society. I mean, I've always been devoted to it and undertake anything that I'm asked to do for it, basically.
Well, any farewell points, either on the society or anything else you'd like to raise?
Well, I think one's got to be a full human being, you know, and that's why I mentioned cycling. One of the things I do is to take blind people for rides on my tandem. This is becoming quite a widespread activity in the country, and we have a race every year at Spalding, which I participate in. We won the veterans class, but that was no difficulty at our age. But it is an activity in which you meet a lot of people and discover a lot of wonderful people who are blind and other people who work with the blind. And that's been something which I've enjoyed enormously. And it's something which I do outside the family, which is nothing to do with my profession, and which is welcomed by those who I do it with. And it's not disapproved of by my family, like going to watching football or playing golf or gliding or something like that would be. So I can thoroughly recommend that kind of activity. And it also, of course, is... helps you to appreciate the advantages of being, what should I call it, not unfit.
Well, we've begun in Lincolnshire. We seem to be ending there.
Yes.
Anything else to say?
Well, thank you very much for your stimulating part in this exercise. I'm most grateful to you for being so tolerant of my idiosyncrasies and heresies.
Well, all right. Thank you very much, Dick.
Thank you.